Accession number 16726, Mr. H. Bell, reel 9.
Mr. Bell, reel 9. You went to Belgaume for jungle training. How did that go?
Very well, but not without incident. We got there by road, and everything went perfectly. We maintained radio communication throughout as an experiment, and the radios worked perfectly. So we got there, that was in March 44, around the beginning of March. And as soon as we got... We passed by on the edge of Goa, in Portuguese India, and I was impressed by what I saw of it, the cleanliness of the houses and so on. It looked like a nice place to visit, which you can't do, and I never got the chance. But so we got to Belgaume, which was when we were going up to Belgaume, climbing up a hill, I saw a lot of baboons, and they were horrible. Massive baboons, all by the side of the road. Anyway, we got there and we got dug in. Dug a hole for the signal exchange and got settled in. It was practicing jungle warfare. That was the whole idea of it.
Do you know what the kind of practice that was? What kind of training it was?
Jungle patrols. It wasn't altogether dense jungle because the carriers, if I remember rightly, the carriers were moving through it. So it couldn't have been all that dense. A lot of it's scrub jungle, I think, which the carriers would be down. I remember the carriers were being used. We did a lot of schemes there. I went out with various companies and, nothing outstanding except, when I was digging the telephone exchange, not by myself, of course, shared work, I dug up two scorpions, about, 4 or 5 inches, massive black scorpions, about 4 or 5 inches long. They were nasty looking things. I never knew scorpions went underground, but these were underground, and I say, scorpion, I never saw a black scorpion before or after, but they were nasty looking things. Also, two very large centipedes I dug up. But I'm going to take care in the future with those things going around.
Were you in tents?
No, we were in jungle. We were practicing jungle. We were in dugouts. We were in dugouts, and we practiced as real as we could get to the actual operation.
Your base would be battalion headquarters, was it?
Yes. Yes, from there I went out. I didn't stay with the company. I went out with the company for... Each company would go out and do an exercise, and some of us would go out with them, and keep in touch with headquarters. So there was two sets on the go all the time.
Did you find the sets working all right in this terrain?
No problem. No problems.
We got
mail out there as well, which is, very welcome from home.
What is the basic formation in the jungle for a battalion? You've got your headquarters, obviously. Where are the companies in relation to that?
In a box formation. I don't know whether it was then or at a later stage that they got the perfect idea. We did work out eventually a perfect formation. I can give you a rough description of it. We had a dugout with three men. A dugout with three men, 6 foot deep. No, but 5 foot, about 5 foot six deep. We dug it down like just as a short trench. with a shelf at the front. The shelf was maybe about 2 to 3 foot wide, going forward, and at the end of the dugout, we planted four forked branches, cut from trees, four forked across these in a horizontal way along the trench. We put two very large, thick timbers, one at the front and one at the back. The rear one rear forks were shorter than the front ones, so it was on a slope back over. Now these were all pointing out over in a ring on a perimeter. Yeah? Across the top, we laid more rather thick logs, and then the turf that we had taken off the dugout, we put on top of there. Now in India, that turf grows immediately. Within a couple of days, you can't see any joints. So all you had was a series in formation of humps with an aperture facing out over, or in some cases towards the middle, sideways. That was a rifle shelf, and you had this aperture, and you could fire, and the people inside could fire out over without fear of hitting their own people, because the back of the was a heap of soil and turf. So you could fire out over. So if any Japanese encroached and came on the top, they could be shot down without you hitting your own men. It was marvelous. It was a really perfect formation. So we did learn. We learned it from the Japs, really. But we picked it up as we went along. So that was what we practiced in Belgaum, the digging of the formation dugouts and.
How did you move through the jungle? Because it'd be pretty dense.
Yes, we had a scare. I was on the radio at headquarters, actually, in touch with this company doing a scheme. And somebody said that the Black Panther. And there was panic stations. The whole scheme was cancelled. Everybody came back. You can't fool about with the Black Panther. there was another thing. I told you about the baboons. Well, headquarters was not part of the formation. Headquarters was running as normal. The cookhouse was in a little clearing. The cook was Biff Wilson. He was bad-tempered. Vicious bad-tempered, Biff Wilson was. The baboons came through the trees and they started to crowd around the cookhouse looking down. And then one of them threw a branch down. And Biff Wilson picked a stone up and he threw it and he hit a young baboon and killed it. And the next day, the baboons came out in force with stones. They had stones, and they were spitting logs and stones on the cookhouse and on Biff, and they had to ship the cookhouse at the finish. They're vicious baboons, and nasty things when they're aroused. They're fierce.
So you moving through the jungle itself. How did the unit go through?
Patrol, section patrol. Nothing special.
It would be difficult moving through, say, in the box formation that you described.
They did practice section work mainly, maintaining communication and doing the patrol and returning. Jungle craft. Trying to move silently through the jungle without getting equipment caught in branches and so on. Practice patrols. That's what it was mainly.
Did you learn to live off the jungle?
No. No, we returned. We returned and had a meal when we got back. You can't live off the jungle. There's nothing to live on. not banana palms and things, you know. it's just thorns, bamboo and thorns. You know, there's two, but there's a male bamboo and a female bamboo. One's got spikes on. I learned to smoke out in Burma. I learned to smoke a pipe. There was a shortage of cigarettes, and there was tins of tobacco to spare. There's very few people smoke pipes, you see. So I made myself a pipe, didn't I? Out of a piece of bamboo, a joint of bamboo, and a thin stem of bamboo with a middle poked out with a wire. And I smoked the pipe for a long, long time till I got back to civilization and bought one. But I kept going on bamboo pipes for months.
Were there any injuries or diseases that the jungle could give you which you didn't get elsewhere? You're talking about spikes and scratching.
Yes. My arms are covered in little scratches and spikes.
Was there any danger of infection?
No. It's clean, you know. There's no disease out there.
You'd have stand to and stand down, did you?
Yes, practice that, yes.
What's the jungle like at night?
Noisy. All sorts of noises.
It must be difficult.
Yeah, you get an edge a bit. Yeah, it's not quiet at all, it's noisy.
It must be difficult getting used to distinctive noises so you could hear human beings moving around.
I wouldn't know. I couldn't tell you that. I knew a voice of a whoop.
Was there some kind of silence imposed on you when it got past, dark, when darkness came in and the night settled in and you were in position?
We had practice stand-dos and stand-downs. No. This was practice, and you couldn't keep in on the go like that all the time. When there's no reason for it, there was no reason for it. You see, we did the odd few night patrols and so on, but it had nothing to do with the headquarters itself. No. Just patrol work.
And you were going out with some of these.
I've got the patrol. Yes. We used to go out with the battle patrol, and we saw one or two animals, antelopes and I think I've said about the black panther, and the whole scheme was cancelled. Baboons in profusion, which are horrible creatures.
Did you practice at night time again as part of your training? Did you practice setting up devices which would make a noise if someone was approaching the encampment?
Not as far as I know. I wouldn't be involved in them, you know. No. Not as far as I know.
So what happened then after you'd finished your training?
When we were there, there was a Gurkha major, and his batman came, and they were telling us jungle tactics and so on, but they also taught us to make a canoe out of the ground sheets of bamboo, and the Rajnath, they're called the bearer, and a very British fella, and it was easy to make, and this major was quite a character. He had a portable gramophone with him, and I remember his favourite record was the one which is partly banned in this country. It was called Gloomy Sunday. It's supposed to be an unlucky thing to sing. It was a very, very mournful tune, but he liked it and he used to put it on. We made one or two visits to him and enjoyed his company. He was a great fella. We went back to Amanuga the back end of March. Back end of March, and we got there and started. We heard them. Well, I wondered what was going to happen next. We heard then a rumour about the Japanese invasion. And we wondered what it was. It was just word that came through that Japanese patrols had been seen, but no definite information at all. And we just wondered if this was it. Which it was, they said, because we were rushed back to camp at Amanuga, rushed back as fast as we could get, kitted out, and away, went by rail to Calcutta, and it was stopped there because we were laid up in sidings. Sometimes we lost our engine, and they laid us. Although it was supposed to be all speed, but it wasn't all speed at all. And I remember we stopped just outside of Calcutta, it pushed into a siding, and Tanky Waterhouse, Major Waterhouse, and I know two or three of our fellas got out. There was one of these water tanks at the side of the railway. We had been there for a half a day, and with a circular water tower thing with a big hose dangling, which was used to water the locomotives, you know. And all after being on the train for a while, they all fancied a shower, so they got out with their towels and their trunks and away up there. While they were there, the train moved off. They eventually got back to us. The colour was in Calcutta, but they were filthy. They had got a lift back on a tenner of a log amongst all the coal. They eventually got back to us, but Tanky Ford wasn't in a very good mood. He wasn't a good-tempered fellow at any time, Tanky. He was really annoyed about the whole affair. So then we got on to Calcutta, and we stopped Calcutta, and we unloaded on the platform. We're given our rifles to impress the population, I think. They gave us some rifle drill on the platform, Sergeant Major. And he came to the and he said, "Company will fix bayonets. Fix!" And our hands went back, and our bayonets were in the coach, weren't they? We just had rifles and no bayonets. What a confusion. What a confusion. So we transferred from there onto a narrow gauge railway, which was run by the Americans, and went straight up the Manipur Road. I remember, I don't particularly like Americans, but on two occasions, one of them which I'll tell you now, I found that they were all, some of them were all right. We stopped, the carriages were lit with a single little lamp at the top, and the shutters were down for blackouts, and we stopped at somewhere on the road up to Manipur. Manipur is a city, you know? It's a big town anyway, at the head of the railway, and the Manipur State, on the border and near where the Japanese were said to be invading. And we were in the carriage, and all of a sudden we stopped at the station, and there was a hammering on the shutters. We lifted the shutters up, nobody said a word, but four cartons of fruit, etc., were pushed through the window. Americans just pushed them in the carriage, and that was for us, you know. They weren't all bad. I think I'll digress a little and tell you about another thing about the Americans, because it was my last leave from up there, and we were at Manipur station, and the train was there to take us, but it was full of Indians. They were sitting on the roof. There was no room at all, and we were on there very despondent with all our kits and that, ready to go for the leave to Bombay. You know, we were ready for it. And we couldn't get on. We were wandering up and down. All of a sudden, two American police, what do they call them, lilies or something, with white helmets on and their batons, came up. What's the matter, lad? And we're told, oh, no problem. And they went in one end of the coach with their batons swinging, and all the Indians poured out the other end, and then they put the U.S. Army stickers on the windows. There you are. So we had a whole carriage all to ourselves, two of us. They weren't all that bad, Americans. They were very good that way. I just thought I'd tell you that. We went to Manipur and got through there. And it was night time. And we got out of the train and groped our way around to what seemed a grove of trees, like a big copse of trees. And we stayed there for the night. I don't know whether I can put this out or not. There weren't trees at all. The Nagas, some people up there, are sex worshippers. There weren't trees at all. They were standing efforts. A whole group of them, all standing about 15 foot high.
made of wood?
Well, there were trees, yes, tree trunks carved at the end. That's what they were. I came across that later on, which I'll come to it. I've got time. So we stood there, and then we went up the no time lost. The Japanese had invaded, and the patrol and had taken the towns at the head of this valley. When we got out onto the road and we looked up there, our hearts sank.
What was the terrain like you were moving into now?
Clear, no jungle. Clear mountainous thing. This part we were on anyway was quite clear and mountainous, hilly anyway. Not mountainous, hilly. But the road went straight up sort of a valley from my room, isn't it? And right ahead was this huge, what looked like a dam. It was just like, for all the world, like a big black dam from mountain to right across the mountains. Just like a big black wall, you know. And we were dismayed when we looked at it. That's where the Japs were. And we said, how on earth are we going to ever take it from them? Occupying high ground like that, you know, it's a hopeless task. But
had you been told, or had you any ideas what you were letting yourself in for?
No, that's one thing that I really miss. We were told nothing. We were told, we were kept in the dark the whole time. We didn't know where the Japs were. Not a clue. We didn't know where we were going, what we were going to do, anything. I think it's disgraceful, really. We didn't know anything. We had no idea where the Japs were, except that they were holding high ground ahead somewhere, but we didn't know. But from what I heard, there was a Japanese, a Scottish battalion wiped out a Japanese roadblock. I don't know much about it, but we moved up the road anyway, and I think it was about a 25th milestone.
You say you moved up the road. Were you in transport or marching?
Marching. There was
you under any observation at this point from the Japanese?
I don't know.
Were they firing at you?
Didn't know where the Japanese were. Absolutely hadn't a clue. Not a clue. And we made camp, I think it was round about the 25th milestone. This campaign, that road was measured in milestones. There was nothing else there. So if you made a camp, it was at the 21st milestone, the 30th. So it was milestones were the sign. So we made there, and then no sign of a Japs at all. We moved up the following day to the 34th milestone. We were pretty spread out there when we camped. Remember, it was my first work at a signal. We laid a line out, the D company who were detached and slightly spread out. We were spread angled across the road, you know. And I laid out this. How I remember this, it was the first time I had laid a line out in action. So that's how I remember it.
Moving down the road, you say you're marching.
Up the road.
Up the road, and you say you're marching. How do you move? Obviously, you're not in threes or fours, are you?
No.
And being a battalion, you must be a lot of
roads. No, you move up the road. There is a photograph in the Daylight Museum, actually. I have a larger copy here. There's a bit of a dispute about it. Martin McLean says they're not ours because the bayonets are too long. We had short bayonets for jungle warfare, but I know myself that the Sigma there, who was our first casualty, and I say the picture is in the DLI Museum of a North Country battalion moving up the road, and it'll show you how we move in single file, section by section by section, staggered, that's it, at the side of the road. That formation was mainly designed in earlier days against aircraft for machine running. You were spread out so you weren't a good target, not easily seen. So that's where you moved up.
Had you, I meant to mention this before, had you received any new weapons from the old rifle and the original ones that you've gone out with?
Going back, I can't say when. Round about 1944, I think, 43. We heard about this Piat. This Piat weapon. And you know, although we were in the centre of India, miles from anywhere, it was kept secret from us. The people who operated, when they had a big gas cape wrapped around it and it moved, they were like Secret Service. I never saw it. In all the time I was in the army, I never saw a Piat. I think the first one I saw was in the DLI Museum. There's the one there. I honestly never saw it because it was kept secret, was kept covered up. When they moved around, it was wrapped up in the gas cape. And that's the only weapon.
Did it get to the companies, the Piat?
I don't know anything about it, no.
What about Sten guns, and did you get Stens in place of rifles, do you recall? They'd be out by now.
There were some Stens, yes, I never got one. At one stage I was given a revolver, and we used to do practice shooting with a revolver, which was 40 yards effective range of a revolver, I think. That's too close for to get to a Japanese. If a Japanese gets that, I went to kill him long before he gets there, so I went back to my rifle. 40 yards is too close.
Did you have tanks with you going up this road?
No. I never saw any, and I don't think there were any. No. And having said that, there must have been tanks and things in the around the boat, because we were put into the hill by tanks and carriers. They opened the last stage of the road up. So there must have been around. Don't ask me though. I can't remember seeing any. But I think there must have been there.